Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thank you.
Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Yeah, we'll do it again for House Street listeners. Go to VRTrader.com. That's VRTrader, T-R-A-D-E-R.com. And when you select one of our newsletters, and there are about six up on the screen, and you get to the order form, enter the promo code 2022 half off, just as it sounds, 2022 half off, and you get 50% off of any of these subscriptions. And I also want to disclose, as I do each week, I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice, but I've been doing newsletter publishing, talking about the markets, forecasting the markets for, unbelievable, now 44 years.
And Mark, you're just not a one-trick pony. You have several publications that people can subscribe to. What are they?
Right. So this is what I was mentioning. You have several choices when you go to the VR Trader website. So, for example, we just know recently some of the cannabis stocks got hot again because of two things that are happening here in the U.S. Potentially, you know, you've got the potential reclassification of marijuana from Schedule 1 down to Schedule 3, and also the possible legislative approval of the Banking Act, which would allow, you know, cannabis companies heretofore who couldn't do banking or use credit cards in many instances and relying on cash be able to function as normal businesses. So they're both pending in the U.S. government. The stocks were cheap. They had a little bit of a run. They pulled back a little. But if this legislation does come through, it should help them and maybe turn around some of the companies, particularly the U.S.-based cannabis companies. But we got off a little bit of a tangent, so that's one of them. And then we have our market timing letter, which just talks about whether you should be in or out of the market. We have the blockchain letter. Also, that's hot, you know, what's going on with crypto and blockchain, Ethereum, XRP, all the interesting things in that market, which is also, I think, in an uptrend or new uptrend, resumed uptrend. And we have our metals resource letter, which, you know, covers everything, crude oil, uranium, gold and silver. In fact, we just took some profits in the oil stocks when we thought we hit a little trading top there, and also in uranium shares. And we also have our VR Forecaster report, our annual report, which comes out every year at the end of January, which gives our little sketch of where we think all the major markets are moving cyclically during the year. And so far, this indicator has been working pretty well. We've been doing it since 1987, but it showed a, you know, possible high point in or around the July time frame, which is pretty close. And it's now saying possible low here, you know, or end of September, early October. So that's something to look at. And yeah, a couple other letters like our platinum and silver letter, which covered the overall market. And, of course, our book is there, The Trader's Book of Volume, which is a definitive guide to volume trading. It's also in Chinese, and I've had a lot of good reviews on it. It covers all the major volume indicators, including my own, the volume reversal. It's about 450 pages. It took a long time to produce, and it's still, you know, valuable today if you take a look at it and you're technically oriented and want to learn about how volume impacts the markets. So, you know, when we use volume, I do cycles. You know, after doing this for multi-decades, you know, you find other, you know, techniques that complement your initial work, and believe me, we use them.
So let's take a look at one of the things that you handle here, cannabis. Anything happening in that sector?
Yes, well, like I say, we had a little run here the last few weeks. Big volume came in when the story came out regarding the ES possible rescheduling of cannabis and the Banking Act story. They're pulling back now a little bit after a big run. It appears by the end of the year, both of these things could happen, which means cannabis could get rescheduled down to a Schedule 3, which I think puts it in the same category as aspirin, and then the Banking Act. So, you know, we're buyers of these things, and we're watching. You know, we've been trading them a little bit, and you know, I think there's more, you know, more action there, particularly the companies in the cannabis space that have positive cash flow. There are a couple names, and one in particular that's in the letter that is making so much money, they're buying back their own shares. So there are some profitable companies there. Unfortunately, you know, you had some bad stories out there with Canopy Growth. Used to be Tweed, the Canadian company, and Tilray. You know, these things ran up to the moon and collapsed, and, you know, a lot of it had to be dependent on U.S. markets, which didn't exist, and their own, you know, mismanagement. But, you know, even those stocks might be able to turn around. So, yeah, that's an interesting area and something to look at.
What's going on with uranium?
Well, the uranium commodity itself, very strong, keeps moving up, and it's been nothing new now. This has been over a year and a half in the making, where you've been in a nice steady uptrend, and I can't tell you why it's happening. You know, is the government buying up the uranium? Is it Japan that's doing it? Is it secretly being bought by a lot of companies around the world deciding that, well, maybe we need, you know, more nuclear fuel for either military or domestic use, so, or new plants that are going to be created? You heard nothing but negative press, as you know, on uranium and nuclear forever, particularly after the Japanese disaster. And, you know, it's been turning around, and, you know, it only makes sense. We know that that uranium and nuclear power are really the answer to our energy needs. You know, fossil fuels are there, and I still think should be used, but they're not going to last forever. And uranium and nuclear are forever, and they are being used both in space and in military purposes. So these stocks ran up quite a bit here. If you look at the charts, they're coming off of a little trading top after a big run. So as a trader, you know, you want to buy a pullback on these things, but I don't think the move in uranium is anywhere but over. It's probably, you know, in, I guess, inning three or something, you know, just getting started. So, yep, very much positive on it. And, again, I really wish I could pinpoint exactly who's placing the orders and why it's going up, other than the anticipation, I suppose, of greater use. And I suppose that's really happening. So why would the basic commodity be upticking if it's not in demand? And the shares, of course, are following that. So it's a growth area. So the hot sectors in the market in the last couple months or so, you know, have been uranium, cannabis after the story came out about the rescheduling and so forth, and crude oil, which just popped, you know, hit a little trading top and is pulling back here. So the market is sort of focused on those three basic commodity areas.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's happening with gold and silver?
Well, it's a little frustrating if you're a gold bull. You know, it looks like it's about to go, and it doesn't go. You know, it's been going on here for the last 2-3 years. We have big runs up and big pulls back, and now we're suffering from a strong dollar, which doesn't seem to be topping out. It looked like it was topping out, and maybe that'll change Monday morning. But with a strong dollar, you know, gold and silver are fighting that. But it was interesting today that silver started to uptick a little bit, even though gold wasn't up. I don't know if it's just ahead of the market or not. Seasonally, we're due for some, you know, rally here, I think, into the end of the year. You know, sometimes these markets move independently, not inversely. You know, we get trapped into believing, you know, dollar up, gold down, and gold up, dollar down. And sometimes they actually move in tandem, and there are periods of time when they can move in the same direction. So I don't want to get caught only in that scenario. So we've nibbled at some of the golds, and I think, you know, each dog has its day. And with what's going on with the U.S. debt, what's going on with the UAW auto strike, what's going on with our national debt, what's going on with, you know, war about to break out all over the world, you know, in different places, whether it's North Korea, Taiwan, or the Middle East, you know, there's so many variables out there that, you know, holding some of a 5 or 10,000-year-old commodity certainly makes sense to me. So I'm thinking, you know, it'll have a bullish resolution with or without the dollar, but from a trading point of view, if you see that dollar break, that gives you the potential of more, you know, momentum here short term. So I'm not a perma bull on gold, but in a way I am, in the sense that I always keep some coins around and I do trade the ETFs. We've actually been trading the inverse ETF several times this year, which means we've actually been short gold stocks and gold and silver itself using an inverse ETF. So when they dropped, we made a little bit of money on the break, and we've had two trades like that in the last month or so where we actually positioned in a couple of the inverse ETFs. And, you know, we didn't make a killing, but we made a little bit of money on those. And so, you know, it's like any market. You can play both sides. And if we have an opportunity, which still may exist here if gold doesn't rally and the dollar, you know, continues strong, but we took profits there, and we're on the sidelines on the inverse ETFs at the moment. But, yeah, that's my bottom line here with gold. We're sort of watching, holding some small core positions, and sort of hoping the dollar breaks to give us a little upside spike.
Anything going on in the crypto world?
Well, there's always something going on. We had a nice little bounce back in Ethereum, XRP, and Bitcoin here. And, you know how I feel about that. You just got to hold a position and sit with it, particularly with the Bitcoin situation with Larry Fink and, you know, the application for an ETF on the part of his company. And, you know, he's running one of the biggest, you know, funds in the world, and he's made an application to the SEC for a, you know, an ETF. Now, we do have another ETF out there, you know, or sort of a way of trading it. We've talked about this many times on the broadcast, you know, GBTC, which is like a Bitcoin trust. But Larry Fink, who's the CEO of BlackRock, decided that they'd like to have a pure ETF. And, you know, again, I think that they're the largest money management company in the world. The number, I don't have the exact number, but I think it's trillion or more. I'm trying to look it up here exactly. Yeah, they actually have 9.4 trillion in assets, making them bigger than most governments. And if not next to the U.S. government, probably one of the biggest entities in existence. So when they put an application in for an ETF, it's going to happen. So what's the point of that? Well, you know, when the World Gold Council applied for the ETF for gold, GLD, you know, a couple decades ago, you know, that when it got approved, that gave investors a chance to buy gold without physically buying gold, and that drove GLD higher and brought support in, because as orders came in for the stock, the ETF, the management had to go out and buy the physical gold. Well, same thing's going to happen once this ETF for Bitcoin gets approved. It's going to go up. And the question is it next week? Is it a year from now? Is it Tuesday morning? You know, you don't know. But, you know, look at where Bitcoin is, you know, around 27,000 and a coin. It was as low as 15 recently. It was as high as the 60s. And, you know, in my own humble opinion, it's probably going to 80,000 or higher in the next couple of years, just looking at the charts. So it's going to have a lot of zigs and zags along the way. But with what's going on in that market, you got to own a little Bitcoin. You know, just if you don't own it through the coin exchanges, you know, like Coinbase and others, you have to buy GBTC or wait for the new BlackRock ETF. I think it has to be a core position. I think you just have to own a little, because it is going up. You know, with all that's going on in the world, with the uncertainty in currencies, the way the dollar is being mismanaged, the way what's going on with the BRIC nations, and, you know, the investors are looking to put money in something other than currency, stocks, gold. They want diversification, and certainly the crypto is one place, and Bitcoin is probably the safest, if there is such a thing as safe in any market. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's big and it's going to have big sponsorship.
The U.S. dollar, is it going to keep climbing?
It doesn't want to come down. It's sort of tied to interest rates. As interest rates keep going up, the dollars become more attractive. You know, money's flowing toward the higher rates and the hoped safety of the Treasury. I know we have this debt issue coming up here in the U.S., and there's always a crisis, but at the very end they seem to, you know, recapitalize things and increase the debt limit, and this is one of our problems. We have really no debt limit, and we've gone crazy in this country. So, dollar, is still going to be the place. That was the expression, the last horse in the glue factory is a survivor. I know the BRICS want to get rid of it, and that ultimately will represent about 84% of the world's commerce. So at some point, something's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to change, that the dollar doesn't have the supremacy that it has. For the moment, it's in an uptrend. And the funny thing about interest rates is that, all the geniuses on Wall Street have been talking about, it's going to come down next year, and the Fed just paused this past week, and it's definitely going to come down next year. History actually says that when the Fed lowers rates after a raise hike, it usually is a result of some outlier event or something really negative is happening, and generally when they lower the rate, the market continues down in a crash scenario, because they had to lower it to try to compensate for some extraordinary event that crashed or affected the market. So the fact that people are anticipating a lower rate end of next year or year before, to me, scares me, because that means things could get really worse in the terms of the equity markets and the economy, whether it's war or some geocosmic event or something political, assassinations, who knows what, something could be coming, and then the rates will be a lot higher, and then they'll have to try to lower them to stimulate things in an emergency event, and it won't be such a pleasant scenario. And I also keep remembering what Paul Volcker did back in 1980, and we've talked about this many times on the show. Rates got to 20%. And we think that 5.5 on a Treasury bill is high. It isn't, and it could go crazy. I mean, you have that potential where it could really explode, and then come down from a much higher level and really blow all these theorists out the window who have been optimistic on all kinds of things tied to a decline in interest rates. And the use of interest rates to break inflation, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum, is ridiculous, because inflation is not related only to interest rates. I mean, look at crude oil going up, which is unrelated to interest rates. It was because of what the Saudis are doing and Iran is doing, OPEC is doing, and the world demand for it. And that fights against any inflation fight. And there's no reason why crude oil can't be $100 or $150 a barrel the next year or two. And what's that going to do? And all the government inflation indexes, like the consumer price index, exclude energy and food in their calculation, which is nonsensical. It's almost criminal in the way the government reports inflation. So your food and energy are going up, but it's not considered part of the price index. What's the point of the index? That's why I don't believe any government statistics. So it's a really interesting scenario. I mean, what's unfolding here? I mean, the least expected event would be interest rates going to 20% and the dollar continuing to explode to the upside. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's a risk factor in your long-term forecast. About the only thing offsetting it that I can think of, forgetting any other universal events out there, is we have a presidential election coming up, and we have the plunge protection team out there. And we have the stabilization fund, which is part of the Gold Act of 1933, and this is where the government comes in and manipulates the markets and has the power to do that. So maybe the government comes in, as they have, I'm sure, already, and Japan does this all the time. Japan owns the equity market over there in terms of the government's involvement. Government comes in here, supports the market, and doesn't allow it to drop as much or crash. So outside of that, and the presidential election next year, those are the two things that you would have to hope for, that if any of these other negative scenarios with interest rates or crude oil unfold, that things could be stabilized. So, you know, that election has a lot of bearing, you know, in these government, you know, institutions that I just mentioned or agencies have a lot of power. They have unlimited deep pockets to buy the S&P futures, the Dow futures, or individual stocks, ETFs and so forth, as the Japanese government does over there. So, it's going to be real interesting how this all plays out. So we're trading. You know, we've been short. We took some profits today on some of the shorts because part of my model said look toward the end of September as a possible trading low, and, you know, we may be a day or two early here. So we took some profits today, which we're happy about. And if we have to jump back in, we'll certainly, you know, take a look at that. But the idea is, you know, try to trade with the markets. You know, when crude oil looked like it topped out a couple of days ago, we sold our USO and our couple other oil-related positions, thinking, you know, I'm bullish. We can, you know, trade them and buy them on a pullback. So the whole thing is, you know, try to swing what's going on. The cannabis stocks ran up. We took a couple some profits there, looking to buy back. So it's sort of taking that trading viewpoint. Did the same thing with uranium. So we're just trying having fun. And, you know, I don't trust markets over long weekends and overnight so much, so I try to be as aggressive as I can. And that's sort of our overall, you know, strategy here, you know, sort of swing with the short-term moves. And, you know, I don't want to get caught in a crash scenario unprepared, so that's why we, you know, we act more or less aggressively.
On the geocosmic front, the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights, so intense. You're seeing them in Arizona.
I know. I got a text from some good friend of mine asking me who lives in Vancouver whether I saw any down here, and I looked up and didn't see it. But then on spaceweather.com, the very good website, there was actually a picture posted by somebody in northern Arizona, north of Flagstaff, that took pictures of the Northern Lights. So here you've got, you know, very active solar flare activity, and you know, people sort of joke, why are you talking about this? Well, you and I joked about the Carrington event for a couple years now, what happened in the mid-1800s when a super flare sort of fried Western Union, and a repeat of that could do a lot of damage to our technology. So it's just something to track, and the government, believe me, and all the government agencies and scientists are tracking solar activity and cosmic rays and all this stuff minute to minute, so it's not talked about, but nothing much we can do about it. I mean, if the sun decides to explode and do something crazy, we're fried overnight, and there's nothing much could happen. In fact, you know, in ancient history, that could have been something that destroyed the planet's life. And it may not have been an asteroid or you know, a super volcano. It could have been a super explosion on the sun and just cleaned everything out on the planet, and we started over again. So these are all things we can't control, but we certainly are monitoring them. And in the meantime, fortunately, it's been minor flares, but we are in an accelerating or upward trending solar activity period. So it's something interesting. You know, I follow a lot of cycles, including the equinox, which is due right momentarily here in the next couple of days, the autumnal fall equinox. And I've been writing about that for some time in our newsletter and warning there could be a market change around that time frame and thinking it would probably be a low point. And so far, it may turn out to be that. So these are all things that, you know, are more powerful and everlasting forces, and it's nice to keep tabs on them, even though we can't control them, and certainly we can try to monitor them and see if that affects us, which they do.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks again for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. And don't forget about his special offer. Visit his website to find out about it. If you have any questions for Mark, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.